Hello and welcome to the Heavenbound Podcast. My name is Jason Harden. I'm here with Roger Schaus, and we're opening the Bible in search of fuel for your spiritual journey. This is where we talk about life the way it was meant to be and what it means to be a disciple of Jesus in the 21st century. Wherever you are, thanks for joining us on the journey today.
We welcome each of you and glad you could be with us today. This month, we're focusing upon When the World Goes Dark, Lessons from the Eclipse. We had an eclipse this past Monday, and it was very special and very unique. A lot of people came to the state of Indiana from all over the place just to witness this. Doing some research about this down here in southern Indiana where we are, the last time there was a total eclipse was back in 1869, which was a long, long time ago. And in eastern Indiana, which was also in the path of the total eclipse, the last time there was a total eclipse in eastern Indiana was the year 831.
That's been a while.
Yeah, there was. That was before Christopher Columbus. There was a lot of time back there. And so that made it unique. It was a crazy time, and it didn't last very long, but it was just kind of interesting. So from that, we've just kind of picked up this month. We're going to talk about different occasions in the Bible where there was darkness. And so in our study last week, we talked about the ninth plague, when God caused darkness upon Egypt and some ramifications from that. And that is there on our website. We encourage you to go back and look at that and listen to that. Today, we went and go to the Gospel of Luke chapter 23. And another occasion we find darkness in our Bible is at the crucifixion of Jesus. And so the three Gospels, Matthew, Mark, and Luke, all tell of this. They all tell the same timetable, which is interesting that you know, it wasn't just one saying it lasted this long. They're exact in how long this darkness lasted.
Longer than four
minutes, realizing that it wasn't just, say, an eclipse, because eclipses don't last that long. And it ties in with several other very unique and even supernatural events that took place there. So reading Luke's account, Luke 23, and verse 44 and 45, and it takes place now when Jesus is on the cross and he is dying. It says, it was now about the sixth hour, and I'll just pause there for a minute. Sixth hour would have been about what time?
About noon. So think 6 a.m., sunrise, add 6 hours. So from 6 a.m., 6 plus hours, that is about noon.
Which is the brightest time of the day.
Yes.
And both you and I have been over to that area, and at noon it is very bright.
Yes.
So this is not taking place where, you know, we're almost at sunset, and you know, it's kind of a natural thing that's happening. No, this is at the brightest part of the day. Okay, at noon it begins, and so reading the verse again, it was now about the sixth hour, and darkness fell over the whole land until the ninth hour,
3 p.m.
So we have 3 hours of darkness. And then Luke adds in verse 45, because the sun was obscured and the veil of the temple was torn in two. And so there is that darkness for 3 hours over the land there. And we want to talk about why that took place and some things with that. We also notice surrounding these events here, there was a massive earthquake. And that, I believe, caused the veil of the temple to be torn, top to bottom. And the significance of that is with a torn veil, torn curtain in the temple, anybody could look in and see it. Before that, only the high priest could really get behind there and be there. But now God was opening that up. Also with that earthquake, it says that the tombs were opened and some of the righteous dead were raised from that grave. And so a lot of, very odd, unusual, once, we could say in history events taking place. And all of this surrounding the death of Jesus upon the cross.
Yeah, it's interesting in Matthew's gospel, very similar. Like you said, the time frame is described in much the same way. Matthew 27, verse 45, from the sixth hour, there was darkness over all the land until the ninth hour. And at about the ninth hour, Jesus cried out with a loud voice, saying, Eli, Eli, lama sabachthani, that is, my God, why have you forsaken me? Matthew seems to couple the darkness with Jesus calling out and using what we know today as Psalm 22, right? That Psalm 22 verse 1 are the words that he cries out. Now you go back and you read Psalm 22. It had been around for about 1,000 years before Jesus quoted it. And in so many ways, it is foreshadowing the idea of crucifixion. Even before crucifixion was a thing, we read that sort of language in Psalm 22. It is not the brightest, rosiest of psalms. It's remarkable to me that it comes right before beautiful Psalm 23, right? The Lord is my shepherd, I shall not want. He leads me beside these still waters and in green pastures. Psalm 22 has a different feel to it. And it's interesting to me that Matthew tells us about the darkness, and then he tells us what Jesus cried out from the cross.
And just right after this, in Matthew's account, in verse 50, it says, Jesus cried out again, and with a loud voice, he yielded up his spirit. So This was taking place in just the last few moments of Jesus' life, and probably the last 3 hours of his life, and then the darkness has filled this land. It would have grabbed everyone's attention. I mean, you know, not everyone went out to Golgotha to watch the crucifixion. There have been a lot of people who didn't know who Jesus was, and there's a lot of people who went about life because they had jobs and things to do. But at noon, when the sky got dark, it would have grabbed everyone's attention. People out in the fields working, they would have noticed this, and they would have seen what's going on. Something is happening. And again, it wasn't just a momentary eclipse that happens every so often. This is something that lasted for 3 hours. And you can imagine the people running into the city looking for answers, wanting the officials to tell us what's going on. You know, who knows why this is happening and all these things. And of course, all of this is connected to his death and to what God himself was witnessing from heaven with this.
Yeah, it's interesting to me in Luke's account, if we bounce back over to Luke, this idea of darkness actually shows up metaphorically the night before. In Luke chapter 22, let me just do a little bit of reading beginning in verse 47. This is where Jesus is in the Garden of Gethsemane with his disciples. Of course, one of them has left. That is Judas, right? And in verse 47, we find Judas leading a crowd. And he draws near to Jesus to kiss him. But Jesus said to him, Judas, do you betray the Son of Man with a kiss? And when those who were around him saw what would follow, they said, Lord, shall we strike with the sword? And one of them, we know from other gospels, this is Simon Peter, struck the servant of the high priest and cut off his right ear. But Jesus said, no more of this. And he touched his ear and healed him. Then Jesus said to the chief priests and officers of the temple and elders who had come out against him, listen to this, have you come out as against a robber with swords and clubs? When I was with you day after day in the temple, you did not lay hands on me, but this is your hour and the power of darkness. Now, it's interesting, throughout the Gospels, on multiple occasions, we read that the hour of Jesus had not yet come, the hour of Jesus had not yet come. There were things that were always pointing to what would happen at the end of his life. But this darkest night before the day where for 3 hours it was dark, again, it's interesting that Jesus describes this, Satan himself, in a sense, having an hour and the power of darkness. Roger, when you hear that phrase,
What goes through your mind?
Well, you know, there's several times in the Gospels that contrast between light and darkness is used. Light being with righteousness or truth or that which is right. Darkness being associated with things that are wrong or things that are sinful. And so we have that contrast found several times. Jesus himself describing himself as, I am the light of the world. Yeah. And so when we think about the hour of darkness coming upon them, we think that Judas and the soldiers that came with them, they were doing a terrible deed. They were coming to arrest Jesus, even though this is all part of God's plan. It was still terrible how it came about and how it had to be. And so we see that darkness. And when we think about the darkness of Jesus' death, I mean, I think at that hour, Satan must have thought he won.
Yeah.
And he must have thought, finally, you know, I couldn't tempt him. And like Matthew chapter 4 talks about, jump off the temple, he wouldn't do that. Bow down, he wouldn't do that. Turn the stones into bread, he wouldn't do this. But finally, I got him. He died on that cross. And for 3 hours, it looks like, you know, the evil wins. But it didn't stay dark.
Yeah.
And light prevailed, and as we sing that hymn, up from the grave he arose, that just changed everything with that. And so I think, you know, when we think about darkness and death, they kind of go together. You know, we get this idea of wearing black to a funeral. I mean, even today I wear a black suit if I'm doing a funeral. It's just fitting to do that. If you showed up in a white suit or something, people might think, well, you know, don't you know somebody died? But then we think about the contrast of that. We wear light colored clothes when we go to a wedding. The bride never walks down the aisle in a black dress. I mean, everyone would be horrified if she does. She wears a white dress. Jesus, in the book of Revelation, is sitting upon a white horse. He has the image and the transfiguration of the sun just shining brightly, you know. And so there's that contrast between darkness and the light, and that Jesus is the light. And so he dies, and darkness prevails. And again, how that would have grabbed the attention. I mean, for the crowd around that cross, for those soldiers who saw crucifixions all the time, that was their job, to put people to death. And how many times they have done that over and over and over. And the sun never went dark before, but on this occasion, it did. And it just shows that this just wasn't another death among many. This was special, and this was God's son.
Yeah, I appreciate how you highlighted it didn't stay dark, though, right? You hear even today that the night is darkest just before the sunrise, right? You're on a long road trip, and at least for me, it's that stretch, let's say, from 3, 4 a.m. to about 5 a.m. That is the toughest, darkest stretch, right? But how powerful for Jesus, even before his death, to say, this is your hour. The light of the world is going to give darkness a metaphorical hour, right? To unleash the worst that Satan can possibly unleash. But I love how John, even at the very beginning of his gospel, assures us, John chapter 1, verse 5, the light shines in the darkness, and the darkness has not overcome it. So, yes, this was an exceedingly dark time, literally and metaphorically. I mean, you think about the betrayal, the arrest, the mocking, the shame, the brutality of the cross, even being put in a grave for 3 days. This was a dark stretch. And Roger, as you highlighted, it made an impression on many people, right? We hear about a hardened Roman soldier being moved to say, truly, this was the Son of God, as he saw those various miraculous things. But it sure does seem like one of the real highlights of the Gospels is, yeah, it got really dark, but it didn't stay dark.
Yeah, and I think it's, it again, just shows just another layer that sometimes we overlook with the crucifixion of Jesus. We see that God is still doing things. And, you know, this just didn't happen. It doesn't just happen at noon, it gets dark. That doesn't happen. And Jesus dying here, I don't think he was the one who made it dark. I think the Father made it dark. As the Father caused the earthquake, as the Father caused the temple veil to be ripped in two, as he brought forth the dead righteous at that moment. All that was kind of combined together, but it shows the activity of the Father.
Yeah.
And I think a bridge for you and I is that sometimes we're in a dark moment in our lives. Maybe things aren't going well in our life, and maybe there's been some sorrow, some death in our life, and just things seem so bad when it's so dark. You know, the storms at night are so much worse than storms in the day, just because you can't see, and that scares you. But to know that God is still there. And God is still seen. God is still involved. That's the hope we have. And that's what a lesson we should pull out of this and kind of appreciate about this, and to understand that of these seven statements that Jesus makes on the cross, majority of them are prayers, praying for his people, praying for his own life, as we think about what he was trying to do for all mankind.
Yeah, I mean, especially that last one. In the heart of the darkness, for him to say, "It is finished." Satan may have thought in that moment that he won, but in fact, this was the culmination of God's glorious plan to save mankind. And Roger, I don't know how your Bible is laid out, but I have on the left side of my opening of Matthew's gospel, the description of these 3 hours of darkness. And then on just the other side of the opening, I read about the dawn of the first day of the week.
Yeah. The sun was coming up.
Yeah.
And what a difference that day made. And sometimes that's what we need to realize, is that, you know, as dark as a storm is, you know, and there's other occasions we could throw in here, you know, that the time when Jesus was walking on the water, it was like 3 a.m. in the midst of a storm. How dark that was for the disciples. It wasn't a bright sunny day and calm lake. No, it was a stormy night, and there came Jesus. But to know that the dawn comes,
yeah,
and that hope is on the horizon, and that's what we need to see. All the problems we endure, we face, sometimes they're going to be lifelong problems. You have some mental illness in the family. You've got a handicapped child. Those things just don't go away by saying a prayer. They're there, and you have to deal with those kind of things. But to know that these problems don't cross over into the next world, that's the hope we have. To understand that God is aware. God will give you strength. God will give you help. God will get you through this. And to know that someday all these problems, they stay here. And this dawn of a new day, the new day in Christ comes.
Yeah, yeah. One of my absolute favorite passages is at the very, very end of the Old Testament, where Malachi is moved by God to promise that the sun of righteousness is going to rise with healing in its wings. And I think that's exactly what you're describing here. When the world goes dark, there's a lot we can learn. We've talked about the ninth plague in the book of Exodus. We've talked about events surrounding the death of Jesus. Lord willing, we'll add two more to this list as the month moves along. But Roger, I appreciate you joining me today. And of course, we appreciate all of you for listening to the Heaven Bound podcast. We hope our conversation has helped you set your mind on things above and given you a little more fuel for your journey. Always remember, when you're walking with Jesus, you're heaven bound, and the best is yet to come.